My brothers, my sisters, welcome to another episode of In Class and We Trust, the White Power Hour with Reverend Matt Hale. This indeed is Reverend Matt Hale speaking to you today on January 16th in the 29th year of our beloved white racial religion creativity, a religion that seeks to unify white people across the world, around the world, for their common interests, a religion that completely dispatches the insanity of Christianity, a religion that recognizes and postulates the fact that Christianity is a Jewish religion that was designed with the very purpose of emasculating and destroying, hence destroying, our great white race. We are a religion whose time has come, a religion that does not accept mud races into it like the others, a religion that does not break bread with the Jews like the others, a religion that does not put value in a fairy tale land that does not obviously exist, such as heaven or hell, but instead focuses on this world, the real world, the world that we know exists. In fact, the only evidence that we have demonstrates it exists and not this so-called afterlife. That being said, I wish to focus on this episode of In Class and We Trust on our great victory in York, Pennsylvania. That is probably no surprise. You have probably been reading a lot about this great event. If you are on our email list, we have sent multiple emails out. We received only one email, though, from someone who complained about there being too many. So unless I hear from more of you that there are too many emails being sent out, I will assume that this is fine. Certainly, you can pick and choose which emails to read. Certainly, you can make that judgment on your own. Our basic strategy in the email list that we have, and if you're not on the email list, by all means, write me right away at pmhale1@aol.com. But our basic strategy in having the email list or in moderating the email list is to send out a lot of information and let you decide what to use and what not to use, what to read and what not to read. We do not, of course, know with exact particularity how many people read this or that email. We have no way of knowing that. And our motivation, our strategy is to make sure that you have the tools to educate yourself with, as well as to inspire you. In fact, inspiration is even more important than education in this regard. You can be all educated, you can be the most educated person on earth, but if you're not inspired, if you're not activated, so to speak, for the great cause that we are fighting for, you will be a nullity, essentially. Education without direction does not have a heck of a lot of purpose. And so we seek to inspire you, number one, and educate you, number two. And judging by the responses to our emails, we are receiving a great deal of progress in that regard. Now, getting to York in particular. York was a great success for a number of reasons. One reason, certainly, was that we mobilized hundreds of white racial loyalists, hundreds of individuals who came together for the common cause. Now, I started this program by talking about Christianity. Well, at the same time, while, of course, we have very strong feelings on this subject, and we believe very strongly that ultimately white people cannot survive as long as they believe in Judeo-Christianity or Christ's insanity, at the same time, we welcome and embrace all those who love their white people, regardless of religion, regardless of political party, regardless of social class, what have you. And we saw firsthand the benefit, the justness of that approach in York, by seeing hundreds of white racial loyalists from many organizations be present and stand together, rank in rank together, for the great cause. That's the first indicia of success in York, why we can call York a great success. Second of all, our enemies once again made absolute fools of themselves. Our enemies who supposedly claim that they want peace, love, and understanding, that they just they want to love, and we're just so bad for hating, and how we're spoiling the show of the world by hating. These individuals show themselves to be far more imbued with hatred than we are. The individuals that come to our meetings, come to our events, such as in York on Saturday, came with masks on, came with clubs, came with tear gas, I hear, throwing rocks, etc. These are the haters. These are the real haters. These are the individuals that, of course, are victims, in a sense, of a maniacal hatred of their own kind. Individuals who, rather than hate the enemies of their people, decide to model themselves on the enemies of their people and hate their own. It is a sickness. And while, of course, we mean to defend ourselves and defend ourselves well when it comes to these events, and I applaud all those who utilize self-defense to fight back this mob, these scoundrels, at the same time, while we do call them scoundrels, while we do recognize their sickness, we also know that we are the cure. We also know that the healthy creed of white racial loyalty and creativity can and will turn a lot of these punks around. We know that they are victims. Once again, they are victims of this society. They are victims of the propaganda emanating from the Jew box 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They are as much in control of their actions as a chicken might be, or in a coop. They are as much in control as a sheep being led to the slaughter. They are being led to the slaughter by the Jew manipulators of the media. They identify with the other races and the cause of the other races in usurping the position of the white race in this society, because that's what the television tells them to do. That's what the television programs to do. If you wish to dress, for example, like a non-white, like a nigger, that is applauded in the Jew press. You can see many shows in which white people are mingling with the other races and are being applauded for doing so, and can copy and emulate the nigger race, listen to their filthy so-called music, listen to their music that, of course, is decadent, to say the least, can dress like niggers, can start to talk like niggers, and that seems to be okay as far as the Jew box is concerned. But of course, if somebody dresses and acts like a proud white man or woman, that is castigated. We have a situation where a pimp and a thief and a plagiarizer named Martin Luther King, real name Martin or Michael Luther King, I believe, or Michael King, I think it was originally, is dramatized, is glamorized, is idealized as a great man, and yet in reality, I just said what he was. These are the facts, but the people don't know these facts. And since, of course, we are broadcasting this show the day after his technical birthday, this is especially cogent at this time to mention that point. There are all kinds of celebrations planned for Martin Luther King, or Monkey Lucifer Coon, as I like to now and then call him, or things of this. To this effect. But this is simply negrophilia. This is love, irrational love of niggers that is being promoted by the Jew manipulators of the press. So these people in York that came out to protest against this, they're simply pawns in a game that they don't even recognize or realize. They are simply individuals that have been taught to hate white people, and they are fulfilling that teaching. Now, of course, I'm referring to the whites. There were some Jews on hand to agitate the white fools. There are also niggers on hand. I heard of one case, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard of one case in which some nigger accosted one of these anti-racist skinheads and attacked him, thinking that he was a racist. I find that somewhat amusing and somewhat poetic justice. If you're going to bed down with the niggers, you might be bitten by the niggers. And that's apparently what happened to that individual, if it indeed happened. What's another sign of the success of York? I'm sure there's something. It's not coming to my mind at the moment, but those are the key reasons why York was a success. York was an outstanding success. We met in a public institution at the public library there, and as we knew, and as they came to know, they could not stop us from so meeting. Still to this day, there are a lot of people that don't realize that if a public library has a meeting room, they have to allow you to meet, period. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. And this security concern idea has been thoroughly discredited and overruled in the courts of law, from the U.S. Supreme Court on down. What they tried to call out in the 70s, in fact, was the heckler's veto, okay? And they still call it that, actually, in the law. You might recall the case in the 70s, the late 70s, involving the National Socialist Party of America and Frank Cullen. Well, it made a lot of news when they announced their demonstration in Skokie, Illinois. They made a movie out of it called Skokie. You might check it out. It's a little bit skewed, the facts, but it's still worth seeing. In any case, the village of Skokie, which had a heavily Jewish population then and has a not-so-heavily Jewish population today, sought to ban this demonstration, claiming safety concerns. Well, they went to court. They sued in federal court, and as well as in state court, and the ultimate state court decision was that, no, the Illinois Supreme Court ruled that, I believe it was the Illinois Supreme Court, it might have been the Seventh Circuit, now that I mention that, the federal court system, but in any case, the highest court before the U.S. Supreme Court juncture ruled that, no, you cannot ban a demonstration, you can't ban a parade, you can't really ban any form of freedom of speech based on what others might do, namely the idea that the heckler gets to veto the event. No, that's not the law. And after initially stating that they would seek to stop me or seek to stop us from meeting at the Martin Library in York, in the press they stated this anyway, that they would take measures to stop this, they quickly realized that they couldn't. They talked to their attorneys. Their attorneys undoubtedly notified them that it was not going to fly. They further considered the fact that I had a law education and that I would utilize lawsuits to get our way into the Martin Library, and they most assuredly are correct. That is exactly what I would have done, and we would have met regardless, and they would have suffered a legal defeat that would have embarrassed the anti-racist city fathers. So it was a great situation in that regard as well. Now, as far as the meeting itself, it was a great meeting. We had some problems as far as Brother Billy Roper. He could not get in. The police would not let him in initially, and then they told him that if he wanted to go in, that his supporters outside, his adherents outside, would have to disperse. And quite naturally and quite justly, Brother Roper declined to do this. I should back up a bit first, though. Brother Roper, Billy Roper, is with the National Alliance, the membership coordinator for the National Alliance. He and I have been on very good terms for a long time. And I invited him to give a speech as well at the Martin Library this past Saturday. But when faced with that fait accompli, situation had to be, or the decision had to be, that no, he would stand and stay out with his comrades and not tell them to disperse. Obviously, it would be dangerous to disperse anyway, and he kept his people together, and certainly we applaud that. And in some ways, it's good that we had me on the inside of the library giving my speech, and we had Brother Roper organizing and motivating the people outside to stand firm for white racial loyalty there. The turnout in the meeting was a full house. We had all of the seats filled, just about. Maybe a couple seats were not, but the police would not let anyone else in, any more people in. If you came to this meeting, my brothers and sisters, and wanted to hear me speak and could not, that is my sincere regret. We knew, of course, that seating was limited, and I attempted to notify you that, of course, through our email messages through our hotline message last week. Of course, at the same time, it was very important, no matter what, to have you there. So do not think for one second that your purpose was thwarted at all, or that your role was thwarted, because we needed very strongly a strong presence outside as well as inside, and we had that. We had, by our count, about 300 people, and that's very impressive. 300 people, about 70 or 80 inside, and the rest outside. This was very necessary for a lot of reasons. Number one, the whole world was watching us on that day. This made headline news on CNN. It made newspapers across the country. We're getting reports even from Canada. It made up made newspapers in Canada. I don't know about Europe, but we made a lot of news. And a lot of eyes were hence on us. Never forget, it is not the Jew media that we're trying to win. We know the Jew media is going to print whatever they want. They're going to say whatever they want. It's not them that we're trying to dissuade. It's the people that utilize or listen to the Jew media. The people out there, the good people, are watching headline news, reading their newspapers, whatever they might be doing. We need them to see that, yes, hundreds and, in fact, thousands one day, and hundreds of thousands, and millions of white people are standing up for the white racial loyalist cause. We must have this. We need to have this. So, regardless of whether you heard me or not, I give you my commendations for your attendance, for your participation in this great event. Now, the question's been asked about videotape. Well, here's how silly the situation was, in fact. And the police's performance, in a lot of ways, was silly, was asinine, and made really little to no sense. Here's an example. We had a camcorder in the meeting, and they would not let us plug it into the wall. Does that make any sense at all? Is there any kind of security safety reason for that? And so, in other words, we don't have it on tape, and this is my great regret. I would love to have each and every one of you have a copy of this video, especially those who made the trip, may have went a long distance to hear me speak. Well, the good news about this, brothers and sisters, is I will be back in that area very soon. I don't know exactly when at this juncture, but I will be back, and you will have the opportunity to hear me speak. And by all means, we have meetings that we will have across the country. The questions come up, will we meet in Texas one day? Will we meet in Idaho one day? Will we meet in Montana one day? Will we meet in California? My plan is to eventually speak everywhere, to speak in every state. Maybe not speak in every city, because that probably would be technically and logistically impossible, but to speak in just about certainly every state. I'll even speak in Hawaii one day. That's fine with me. And enjoy the sun and the beach and everything else while I agitate to have the Polynesian scum removed from that island. In fact, it's my plan, my brothers and sisters, to make Hawaii one day a resort for overworked creators. We will enjoy this very much, and by golly, that's what we should do. I know many of you work extremely hard to promote creativity, and I applaud you for that. And one day, of course, there's going to be a lot of us that have earned a vacation to Hawaii, and of course we'll rename Hawaii. We do not want any vestige of mongrels left in America, in its states, and we will rename it, who knows, maybe Clausen State or something like that, so that would be appropriate. So keep this in mind. I hope to be in a city and a state near you very soon, as soon as possible. And keep this in mind, that the more funds that we can raise, the more funds we can raise to make these meetings possible, to be able to transport me from here to there, wherever it is, the more we can do so, the more likely we can have a meeting in your neighborhood. So keep this in mind when it comes to donating to the church. We need your donations very much. There's no getting around this. We can survive without it. We can technically survive because our voice boxes are intact, our energy is intact, but it makes it much more difficult to win if we don't have your donations. I mean, surviving is nice, but I want to win. I know you want to win. So we have established a public meeting fund. We currently have a relocation fund to consolidate our membership in Illinois. We also have a legal defense fund to help those who have been persecuted by the Jewish occupational government for being a creator, for being a white racial loyalist. And we also are establishing a public meeting fund. Basically, the more money we have in this fund, the more we can purchase a plane ticket, and the more I can go from here to there and give a speech. And we saw the benefits of it in York. We saw how easily we could reserve a meeting room, come to York. I didn't even spend 24 hours there. Actually, it was about 24 hours I was in York. And we received thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of press. And we reached millions of people with our message. That is one of the reasons why York, of course, was such a great success. We brought creativity to multiple people. And I noticed one of the AP quotes was especially good. I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, but one of the AP quotes, you might have saw it in your local newspaper, in which I said, "We believe in the advancement of the white race and will not apologize, compromise, or grovel to anyone." Something like that. A very good quote. I must say I'm surprised that the Jew media gave us a quote like that or printed that quote. But that's the type of message that resonates with millions of people. A lot of people are saying, hey, wait a minute, what about white people? We hear about the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. We hear about the Jewish Defense League, whose members and leaders are now facing trial for being domestic terrorists. We hear about the La Raza organization, which means the race in Spanish, actually mongrel Indians that are usurping the Spanish language. We hear about various organizations. We hear about Rainbow Push, Jesse Jackson, or Jesse Hymetown Jackson, as I like to call him. And so a lot of people, when they read that quote in the newspaper, are thinking, well, yeah, what's wrong with that? Seeking the advancement of white people, and they're not going to compromise, grovel, or apologize to anyone. That is a strong message. It's a very clear and a very simple message. Sometimes people get a bit squandered on the details. Details are nice, but the simplistic message of creativity must be that which is most promoted, namely that white people deserve a future. Who can argue with that? Who can debate that notion? Who can say, well, I think that white people should have no future? You might have a few in the anti-racist action, some of these various freak organizations, but the average white man, woman, and child is thinking to themselves, or at least if it's brought to their attention, that, yeah, you know, here's an organization that believes that white people should have a future. How can they complain rationally or logically with that notion? They can't. So let's dwell on that, in a sense. Let's not dwell, for example, on necessarily every solution we have when it comes to the masses. Now, of course, this show is different. We're going to talk about a lot of details on this show. But when it comes to the masses, who are new in some ways to our cause, who certainly are bamboozled with Jewish propaganda all the time, we have to be very simplistic. Our message has to be very simple and very understandable, hence, to all segments of the white population. But in any case, yes, what a day. What a day it was in York. It was great to see the flags flying. It was great to see so many people wearing our t-shirts and the creativity t-shirts, etc., waving creativity flags, etc. Obviously, that's the phone. We'll let that go, of course. It was great to see it on this heroic day. The great enthusiasm, the dedication, and once again, let me make it so absolutely clear that we shake the hands of all for the white race. We embrace all of them as our brothers and sisters. All of you who came, who are listening to me, who happen to be listening from the Aryan Nations, from the National Socialist Movement, from the Posse Comitatus, from the National Alliance, and all other organizations I might not even know about. Oh, certainly the Hammerskins, etc. We applaud you. We embrace you, our comrades. We will fight together, certainly again soon, physically and literally, for our great cause. There is strength in numbers, as is quite obvious. There is great strength in numbers, and we showed that strength on Saturday. I believe very strongly, my brother and sister, that the public meeting strategy of the church has proved to be absolutely correct. I believe very strongly that we have supplanted the notion of private activism being far more important or being the only way to go. No, we need to meet in public. We need to show our faces. We need to demonstrate clearly what we believe in to the masses. We have to win the streets of America. In York, we fought for those streets. We did have some people injured, nothing extremely serious to my knowledge. We did have some people arrested. But that's a price to pay for achieving the freedom of our people. That is a price to pay to make sure that our people continue to exist in this world. There is no soft way of winning this struggle. There is no way of simply passing one pamphlet and hoping that you win the world. Distributing the literature is extremely important, but even more vital is those who believe us standing up. Those who believe in us and in our great cause standing up for this great cause. That is even more vital and necessary. Let us remember, so clearly, it was mass activism that propelled the National Socialist German Workers' Party into power in Germany. Let us remember that Adolf Hitler, whom many of us respect and admire, and certainly yours truly, does so. Adolf Hitler espoused mass activism, the mass meeting. People ask me now and then, rarely, but now and then they ask me, where did I get the idea to have meetings? Adolf Hitler! In Mein Kampf, read the second volume of Mein Kampf, and it says it very clearly what we must do. And I will say this, that in many ways the World Church of the Creator is more National Socialist than the National Socialist when it comes to tactics. Our tactics are very much influenced and inspired by National Socialism. And I never can understand, and in fact, I would say, I'll even say this, now some people might criticize me for this, but I'm going to say it anyway, that anyone who considers himself a National Socialist and says that we should not demonstrate or meet publicly is not a National Socialist. Anyone who says that they are true to the teachings of Adolf Hitler and actually believe in being a quiet National Socialist or believe in leaderless resistance and things of this nature is not a National Socialist, because National Socialism is about mass activism. Now we racial loyalists of the World Church of the Creator, that is the term that we prefer to use, that's the term that we believe in, because as many of you know, we believe in uniting white people worldwide. We are not simply a German phenomenon or an American phenomenon. We believe in all white people, and that's a big difference between us and the National Socialism of the National Socialist German Workers' Party. But my point is, as is probably clear already, that the tactics were right, and that we need to utilize mass activism tactics. Yes, if somebody gets hurt, that's unfortunate. But that's a fact of life. If somebody gets their license written down by the feds, who cares? We can't care about that anymore. We shouldn't care about that. They don't have the power or the resources to track all of us down. And furthermore, the fact of the matter is that the federal government, the police forces, are not in the business. As much as this may be a surprise to some people, they are not in the business of persecuting all of us. And they don't. If that were the case, if they were involved in the business of persecuting all of us, then why am I on this show right now? Why am I free? The fact of the matter is we must stay legal, always be legal, and they have no grounds and no ability to persecute us. At least not this time. The day has not come for IRA-type tactics. It hasn't come. My interest, in fact, is in recruiting law enforcement. my interest, our interest is not in rebuking them all the time, or smearing them, or attacking them physically or verbally. My interest is recruiting them, winning law enforcement to our great cause. And we, of course, know. Maybe I shouldn't say of course. Let me just talk about it as if it's not at the forefront of my mind at all times. Sometimes that's a hard habit to break, to assume that other people know what you yourself know. But let us think of it this way. If we can win the police departments, if we can win federal agents to our cause, to our line of thinking, to our way of thinking, our victory will be much, much more likely. I repeat, if we can win law enforcement to our cause, we will have a much greater chance of winning. Now let me give you some illustrations. On Saturday we had these anti-racist scumbags. Most of them preach anti-police messages. Some of them probably threw things at the police. I don't know if there are any police injuries, but in any case, let the police see that we are the decent ones, that we are the orderly ones, that we are the law-abiding ones, and that the enemy is the enemy. Let them side with us. Isn't it appropriate and good to have law enforcement support the World Church of the Creator? There are undoubtedly cops around this country that do support the World Church of the Creator. We have some police officer members. I would like to have some FBI members. As long as we always know, of course, that our position is a legal one, that we believe in legal and peaceful change, it takes the wind right out of their sails. They can't persecute us. Not technically. There might be a case here and now and then. I'm not going to say that every cop is a saint. I'm not going to say that everyone is a good man. I'm not going to say that they're not that all of them are free of corruption, because we know that that's not the case. And furthermore, obviously on Saturday we had some strange goings on by the police. But why make them additional enemies? Those, of course, who are white and who believe and must obviously know that the races are different through their daily activities, seeing how the niggers behave in this society and how they're committing so many crimes. Let's win them. And we have a situation, a deliberate situation, in which we have these public meetings at the libraries, knowing, of course, that the police will have to attend and will attend, and the anti-racists will be furious with the police because they are naturally against the police, and so the police more and more side with us. It's as simple as this. If you have an anti-racist yelling fascist pigs at the cops are going to be like, well, hell with you. And they're going to be more receptive to creativity in our message. Let us always remember this, my brothers and sisters. We have no natural disagreement with law enforcement. For example, we're not trying to overthrow the government through force or violence, and so that's no concern that the police can have. They don't have to have that concern. We believe in law and order. They believe in law and order. We hate the niggers and the other mud races, and the police undoubtedly, many of them have hatred for them as well, seeing the amount of crime that they commit, how they make their lives more difficult on the force. The only thing we disagree with them about is the governmental order, the governmental power. Whether we should give our allegiance and respect and love to this government. Well, I think a lot of regular cops out there, and even people in the FBI, don't like some of the people that run this show today. In some ways, it reminds me of what Rockwell had to say about the police, and I would echo that. I believe that Rockwell was right about that. George Lincoln Rockwell of the American Nazi Party was right when he said that the cops generally are professional people, and they simply want to do their job, and we need not rebuke them like the hippies do, or what have you, for doing their job. Once again, remember, it's a matter of tactics, and it's a matter of realizing if we can have those who are legally entitled to carry guns on them, on our side. Let's do it. Let's do it. I've talked to many cops personally who have given me the thumbs up while driving by or came over and shook my hand and told me to keep up the good work. I've seen this. I've experienced it over and over again. But more than anything, be sure to always be professional. If you get pulled over for a speeding ticket, you don't have to cuss the guy out. Say, officer, you got me fair and square. Here you go. Here's my license. That's what you do. Remember, these people have authority. They have power. And it's best not to challenge someone's power directly. It's better not to say, well, officer, you better not give me a ticket. It's far more effective to say, for example, officer, you got me fair and square. Give me the ticket. Because then he might be like, oh, just slow down next time. If you challenge someone's authority, they are more likely to try to exercise that authority. So let's not challenge the authority of the police. Sure, they have the authority. Sure, they have the power. And by having an understanding of the psyche of police officers, and understanding that it is in our interest to win law enforcement, we can have a situation somewhat similar to that which, once again, happened in National Socialist Germany, or happened in Germany before it became a National Socialist state. In 1933, you had a situation where numerous police officers were in the Nazi Party. You had a situation in 1923, for example, when Adolf Hitler led the Beer Hall Putsch, as it was called afterwards anyway. Of course, they never called it that, but the march on the Feldernhalle, in which 16 National Socialists lost their lives for the swastika banner on that day and for Germany. You had the situation next year when he was put on trial for that act, and there are many people urging acquittal and people urging a light sentence in law enforcement because he was out for law and order. He was trying to reverse the sins of Versailles that emasculated his nation. He was trying to topple the Jews who had taken over Germany. And a lot of people sympathized with that inside and outside of law enforcement. So just keep this in mind. Always, in fact. Now, the next thing to talk about on this week's episode of In Clausen We Trust is the debate that I was going to have with the NACP, and that's the update on this episode. I made this challenge, let me just give you the background here. On December 26th, I mailed to the NACP in Pennsylvania, the synagogue in York, Pennsylvania, as well as Kathy Ash, who is the head of the Human Relations Commission in York, and also this clown school board director, Kirkland. I can't even think of his first name offhand. I mailed them a challenge to debate the issue of race. I presumed I would not even get a reply, because these people usually are afraid to debate this issue. They are afraid to face the truth in a public forum. They are afraid that they will lose, and of course they would lose, hideously. I guarantee if I were to face one of these clowns in a public arena and debate the notion of racial equality, that they would be stammering, they would be falling all over themselves, they would be flushed at the face, if they were white that is, and would want to quickly end the debate or resort to emotionalisms and personal attacks. Well, as it so happened, on January 5th, I heard from the president of the Greater Harrisburg, Pennsylvania chapter of the NACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, Paula Harris, and she informed me that she accepted my challenge. Now, the only thing was that while I had originally intended the debate to occur at the York meeting, I decided that by the time I heard from her, when I heard from her, that it would be best to put that off, to make sure that we could go ahead and have a completely, how would I put it exactly, an event that was singular in purpose rather than have so many things at one time. I thought it would be best to have the meeting and then come back to Pennsylvania for the debate. Well, everything was fine. We talked several times. She was very respectful. I told her very clearly that, yes, I would argue and debate her that on the notion of racial equality and that blacks are, on average, inferior to white people intellectually. She agreed to that term of the debate. She also wanted to add a term to the debate, which I had no objection to. Should the races be treated equally under the United States Constitution? I think that's fine to debate that issue, because as far as we're concerned, as is logically enough, we believe that if the races are not equal to one another, they shouldn't be treated equally. It's like saying, okay, dogs are inferior, but we're going to treat them equally. We're going to go ahead and let them go to school. We're going to let them go ahead and use the toilet. Let them do whatever. Obviously, that would be ridiculous. Or saying monkeys are our equals. If monkeys were our equals, then why not have them in public schools and everything else? But if they're not our equals, they should be subject to our will. It's as simple as that. So we talked about this, and we agreed that on Monday, the 14th, I would send out the press release announcing to the world that this debate would occur, and that would occur on February 16th in Harrisburg, the capital of Pennsylvania. Location to be determined, but the time would be 7 p.m. We agreed on all of this. Well, lo and behold, no big surprise. A few hours after I sent out the press release, the media was calling me saying that Paula Harris was denying. First, I was getting calls saying that Paula Harris was denying that she had ever accepted the challenge. At which time, I played my answering machine message back to the media, and which clearly indicated she even used the words, "I accept your challenge." So, I play this back for the media to make sure that, of course, I was not lying. See, the media, of course, they have this image that, you know, on any issue, if there are two sides, my side, our side, must be wrong. Obviously, it's not the case. And yes, it was probably stunning to the media that the NAACP would finally show the character to debate us in a public forum on the very foundation of their existence. Namely, that the races are equal. After all, let's consider the fact that if the races are not equal, once again, all these social programs involving race in this society are foolhardy. They are all based on a shaky, quicksand-like foundation. For example, if the races are not equal, why should they be integrated? Why should blacks get to go to white schools if they are inferior? Let them go to special ed, whatever. If the races are not equal, why should white people be willing to intermarry with the other races? Wouldn't that be a throwback? Wouldn't that be devolution? Of course, if they are inferior, it is. When it comes to affirmative action, if they're not equal, well, affirmative action basically demonstrates that it takes special privileges for blacks to enable them to succeed at all in this society. And some blacks will even admit that, and some blacks are, in fact, against affirmative action for that reason, because they know it sends the implicit message to people in this country, regardless, in fact, of race, if you want to call them people, that the blacks just can't make it on their own. They need a handout. They need a special entry into the line. They need extra points on exams. They need everything extra. So, in any case, that was the situation. Let us debate this. That was my challenge, and she accepted. So, however, though, we received these calls from the media, but gradually in the afternoon, the calls became more like, well, she accepted, but she has declined. She has changed her mind because of safety concerns. Now, I know, all of you out there, including myself, is probably thinking, probably was thinking, in my case, of course, that she reneged because she was a coward. Well, I'm not so sure of this. It's quite possible that she looked at York, looked at what happened in York, and decided that it would be a breach of security, that there might be people hurt because of the debate, that anti-racists could show up and try to utilize violence against people in the debate or people at the debate. I think that that's a little weak in some ways, because it is a debate. It's not exactly a public meeting. It would be a situation where both the NAACP as well as the World Church of the Creator would promote, obviously, a civil discourse. This was not meant to be a rally of any kind. But I can understand what she says, and it may have some truth in it. I'm not going to presume it doesn't. But in any case, it is disappointing. We would, of course, won this, hands down. I would, in fact, challenge her once again at this time. Let's debate. Let's debate. We can debate. In fact, we have a couple possibilities that can alleviate her security concern, and we'll find out very soon if her security concern is legitimate or simply window dressing. Here are the possibilities. A radio show call today and would like to have the debate on the radio. I could be on the radio, she can be on the radio, and hence there is no mob, there is no violence in the streets that we saw in York. Another possibility is public access. She could be on the phone on public access or be in person on public access, and I could be on the phone or be in person on public access television. I would like to be in person. It gives me somewhat of a disadvantage if she's there in person and I'm on a phone. It's just not as persuasive to people. However, I would do that if that's what we had to do. So these are possibilities that are out there right now. And we will find out very soon what her true motivation was in reneging, in running from this challenge. And you have to say, she did abscond. Now, she told me on the phone, she said, well, I'd be more than happy to floor you into debate and blah, blah, blah. Well, that might, you know, she might think that, but let's face it, she doesn't have a leg to stand on. Racial equality is the most unproven idea probably in the history of the world. There's more evidence, perhaps, that the world is flat than that the races are equal to one another, and obviously the world isn't flat. So there's more evidence in UFOs than there is in racial equality. There's more evidence that Elvis Presley's still alive somewhere than the idea of racial equality. So when thought of in those analogies, it becomes very clear that whatever she's saying, whatever her protests are, that she would do this, that she'd win the debate hands down, and she even used that phrase, I think, you know, let's face it. She's not debating me at this time. She reneged on the February 16th date, and you can draw your own conclusions. We'll find out very soon, though. We'll find out very soon if we can do it on the radio, and of course, if we do, then we'll broadcast this as much as possible. We'll have the audio cassettes, so we'll get a copy of it, make sure that everyone can listen to it. I don't know if there's any way to, increase the distance of the radio show. I mean, this is something that really calls for international spotlight. The NAACP has not debated anyone on the notion of racial equality or anything that included the notion of racial equality for 38 years, to my knowledge, since George Lincoln Rockwell debated this Tony Todaro guy, and I don't know how to spell it or maybe even pronounce it, in Hawaii in 1964. He debated him, and Rockwell creamed this NAACP leader. I mean, it was a farce. The guy looked like a complete imbecile, and Rockwell showed his tact, his wit, his humor in such a way that the other guy just was flustered. It was hilarious. So, we were very interested in continuing to push a debate, if not with Paula Harris, then with any leader of any authority within the NAACP. If you believe so much, Mr. Equal Rights Individual, that blacks are equal to white people, then prove it. Prove it in a public forum. Otherwise, you're just revealing to the world that you have no confidence in your own cause. So this is going to be a continuing drive, to have this debate. And I'm going to keep contacting Paula Harris. I'm going to try to push her to go ahead and go through with it. And once again, if she declines to go on the radio and do it on the radio, we know she's a liar. We know that she was pressured in some way, or she thought the better of it, so to speak, as some people might say, or the Jews called her up on the phone and said, hey, if you do this, we're not going to put any more money in the pockets of the NAACP, or other people called and threatened to withhold donations. Whatever the case may be, we'll find out very shortly what the reality is. Boy, racial equality, what a ridiculous concept. I've been struggling for years trying to well, not struggling for years, trying to, but, you know, for years, since I was 11 years old, I realized that racial equality is a pernicious doctrine, is a doctrine that makes mice out of men, is a doctrine that is responsible largely for the contamination of our white race with the blood of the misfits. I understand why. We have to understand why white people are willing to... Boy, I hate to put it this way, and I hate to do it, but let's face it. Why are white women spreading their legs for nigger savage animals? Racial equality. That's it. They've been taught that the blacks are their equals. In fact, they've been taught that blacks are even better because blacks are supposedly so virile. Blacks are supposedly such great athletes. They're just so strong and muscular and all this. They're such great singers. They're such great this. They're great actors. And so, sickeningly enough, bastardization occurs as a result. White people say, well, some of these white people, of course, just still a small percentage, but a growing percentage of white people, especially white females, are saying, well, he's a big black man, he's my equal, I've been taught he's my equal, so why not mix with him? Why not breed with him? Why not have a little mongrel savage come out of me? Sick. It is sick. And I hate to have a show that makes you feel uncomfortable in that way, in a sense, but if that doesn't motivate you to fight back against this nonsense, what can? What does? If seeing a lily white woman hand in hand with an ape man doesn't make you sick and want to fight this sickness at all costs, I don't know what will. No literature is as effective as that. No printed matter could ever rival simply seeing a little half-breed mongrel or seeing a white woman with a nigger savage physically. I mean, what could possibly rival such a thing? So, keep that in mind. Now, we have to face the fact that, of course, we have the white men out there that in increasing numbers are breeding with Orientals, breeding with Hispanics, and just today, downtown, I hate to say it, downtown, well, not downtown, but at the Walmart, which is right across the river from Peoria, where we do have niggers. We don't have niggers much in East Peoria, but at the Walmart, where niggers like to apparently go, it's like a magnet for them. I saw a white man with his nigger animal in tow with five mongrels, all running all over the place and acting half savage, since obviously they are half breeds. Sick. The man, of course, should be one day tried, and if he doesn't repudiate the mongrels fully to our satisfaction, he should be tried, convicted, and executed for racial treason. Racial treason is far worse of a crime than national treason. Racial treason destroys the most precious commodity treasure that we have, our blood. No person has the right to mix their race. Let that be very clear. There is no such thing as an individual right to bastardize your people. Or as Adolf Hitler put it, and I, of course, am talking a lot about him on this program, but there's a lot that he said that was wise, is true, is glorious. And what he said was there is no freedom to sin against posterity. That's what we believe in. That's what we as racial loyalists, as believers in racial socialism, believe in. That the interests of the race supersede whatever individual petty interests an individual might have in partaking in sexual relations with that which is hundreds of thousands of years behind him on the evolutionary scale, or her. It is a sickness. And it is caused by this racial equality myth. If we end the racial equality myth, if white people come to understand and accept that the other races are like chimpanzees are to human beings, I mean, blacks are essentially between chimpanzees and humans. If they understand that blacks, that Orientals, that Hispanics, Latinos, as we like to call them, all the other mud races, if they understand that the mud races are their inferiors biologically, genetically, culturally, certainly, in every other intellectual, noble way, they would not breed with them. Not like they do now. Not like they are right now. Well, my brothers and sisters, we've covered a lot on this program. York, once again, wonderful day. Wonderful day in York. We will have many, many more meetings. If you missed York, there's going to be another one, without a doubt. I will be planning the next few days, in fact, the next location of our next meeting. I do hope and do intend on making somewhat of a nationwide tour. So your state hopefully will come soon. There's been some talk, in fact, about Minneapolis, Minnesota. That is something on the drawing board. I would like to go there. Minnesota is a good state in a lot of ways, a lot of good people there. There's been talk also about Southern California. I am interested in Southern California as well. Basically, essentially, it depends on what kind of support we can have, what kind of support we can rally. If we can continue as we have in the past, or as we had, or as we did in York, rally all white racial loyalist people to our great cause, to the great cause. And as I said in my speech in York, which unfortunately has been lost to posterity, but certainly those of you who are there can spread the message of what I said at that time. As I said in my speech, your skin is your uniform, most fully. There is no uniform that is more indelible, more important, more significant, more far-reaching than your skin. And let us remember this, my brothers and sisters. I implore you, I beckon you, as always, to do your duty, to spread the holy message of creativity, to support the church, once again, financially. We need your support. The more money we can bring in, the more we can win. The more likely we will win, the more speeches I can give, the more we can mobilize white people everywhere. Our address, again, P.O. Box 2002, East Peoria, Illinois, 61611. Send us whatever donation you can. Be sure to obtain your copy of Nature's Eternal Religion and the White Man's Bible for $10 apiece. Get these holy books. We will send you a copy of The Struggle, our monthly publication as well. Read these books, and once you read these books, you will know that creativity is the ultimate solution, that creativity is the wave of the future. A white racial religion for white people. No more following false gods and worrying about the so-called chosen race, the Jews. Instead, we have a religion that exalts in white people. A religion that embraces white racial loyalty, the purity of white people in this world. Obtain those books. Send $20 to that address, P.O. Box 2002, East Peoria, Illinois, 61611, and donate to the Public Meeting Fund. And if you do, we will be that much closer to bringing the message of creativity to your area, to having a meeting everywhere in this country. I want to have a public meeting every week. We could have York every single week if we work hard enough at it, if we, of course, push white people to stand with us. Can't always just have the same people. We have to have new people in our cause. That's your job. That's my job as well. Well, we're out of time. Thank you again for listening. I think this was an especially good show in many ways. I hope you agree. Let's together win this racial holy war. Rahala!